So, what do you think about those goats that that scream?
Some of them sound like goats screaming, and then some of them do sound like humans. It's pretty funny. I love goats. I want one. One tried to eat my hair once. And there'll be lynx, I'm sure.
The goat at the ranch in Maui. The goat farm in Maui. That one didn't try to eat your hair.
No, that one I fed hay.
Those were very nice goats. They were very friendly. Okay, yeah. Surfing goat. Some darker ones and lighter ones. All range of them. They milk some of them. Yeah, the surfing goat dairy, right, in Maui, yeah.
And we showed up at the right time, and we got our own tour, a private tour, just the two of us, with one of the women who worked there, and she was really cool. She knew all the goats and their names and all their personalities, and she walked us all around. We got to see a lot. It was a lot of fun. And that was after our Haleakala bike ride. Yeah?
Yeah, that we took the tour. The bus piled into that bus with the other honeymooners because they split the group at the yeah. tour company, the bike rental company, like, because they sell you the rental of the bike for the way down and a bus ride up, right? When they have like a truck for the bike, so they are renting from them. But the cool thing was we then were able to split apart. Everybody just kind of was to return the bikes at the store down in Haiku later in the day. And so instead of one of those groups where everybody's biking in a line, it was just you and me. And it was great because, yeah, I managed to get us, like, kind of lost and you found our way. Like, sometimes with those, there's, in a city, I'm usually, other than San Francisco, no contest there. But in a city, I'm usually the one that does some of the directions for sure, like finding the way around. Like,
yeah,
but
on a large scale, probably 80-20.
Well, yeah, but except in San Francisco, where you're just a guru, and it's interesting because I'm actually like LA's so big, and you were like 14 when you moved right away from there, so like you know it fairly well. But like going there and really liking it and driving around it and looking at maps, like I've kind of picked up, so I'm almost at parity with you. Whereas in San Francisco. You did live there longer than I did. It took me a little longer to get there. But then, you know, I mean, I met you when I got there. But, you know, I was trying to get there. But when I got there, you would live there a little longer. But I was amazed when we went back for a honeymoon a few years ago how much more you knew about the streets. And the way that downtown hits Market Street there and becomes Soma and the angle of those streets and one of those big blocks where I was taking us around the really long way and you told us that, do you know what I mean? Like you did work down there. You were very familiar with downtown, but I mean, I was very familiar with it too. And you really understand San Francisco, but yeah. So the big cities though, other than San Francisco, I'm often Chicago or even LA. I'm often, you know, looking at, you know, figuring out the directions, but
Chicago totally lost.
Absolutely, yeah. Chicago is a pretty advanced course, except it has a lot of grids in the north side.
The first time we drove there, you were like, "All right, you're never gonna see traffic like in Chicago." And I was like, "I'm from LA. I've seen traffic." And then I was like, "Oh my god, there's so many cars. It's like a parking lot. Like LA." There's like a lot of traffic, but it's going really fast. And sometimes you get this like back-to-back thing, but it's kind of always moving. Chicago, you would move like inches.
Yeah, what people...
Oh, it's painful. Like you can see your exit and you're
People consider going kind of slow traffic. They consider in LA, they consider that moving in Chicago.
It's like it's gridlock. That's what it is. There's too many people and too many cars for the road. And you just need more roads or less people, you know? We know people who want to get less people, huh? There's all these big pushes for, you know, slimming down the population.
Yeah, I mean, I think It seems like it's one of those things that you hear people say, and people have ingested a lot of this mythology. Like, people seem ready to accept the idea that there's too many people, and that's used. Yeah, that's used in some of these ideas that are out there about poisoning the water and stuff. I mean, why is there so much fluoride in the water if people drink it? Like, you know, if it has benefits for teeth, then why don't people wash with it? Like, why is it the thing that they put when they you know, like they actually add it to the water supply? Like, but you know, you, I mean, we're basically looking at people where we're people that really people that really hold these views that are very extreme. You know, like John Holdren. Have you ever heard of that guy?
I haven't.
All right, so John Holdren is an advisor to Barack Obama.
What does that mean exactly? If you're an advisor, are you on the payroll?
Yeah, okay. I believe he is.
And does he have a specialty?
Assistant to the President for Science and Technology. Okay, so the
shut up already! It's science.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all right, so this guy is one of those people that pushes the eugenicist kind of agenda in the name of science. You know,
pretty soon we're just all going to be in FEMA camps.
that's a new sound that I came up with.
On your awesome soundboard.
Yeah.
How many do you have on there now?
It's about 10 or so. Yeah, you know, roughly. And it's
12.
Like 12.
Is that open to the public?
Yeah, there's a link. I'll put a link in this show notes. I put it in the show notes a few
that's very nice of you.
Podcasts ago. Yeah, so you can, if you need some sounds to talk about this. Now, I'm looking at the search and I wanted to find something reputable. So here, American Prospect website, prospect.org. Now they're talking about this guy, Holdren. So the headline is Holdren's controversial population control past from July 21st, 2009. Quoting, White House science czar John Holdren co-authored a textbook in the 1970s that discussed coercive population control. Should this disqualify him as a serious voice on science? So they're putting it up for debate, I guess. End quote. It's like here, you know, they're talking. Then they go into talking about people on the, you know, on the conservative side have brought up this guy. And, you know, part of it is that they offend their views, and that part of it is they want to attack Obama. But forget about where, you know, it's coming from. I mean, look at the substance of what this guy says. Like, I mean, you're looking at people that push ideas about controlling population, concerns about, you know, population explosion. And, I mean, look at what really goes on when people are advanced enough economically. They tend to have very low fertility rates, so people in America, even, it's not like there's that many people. There's a lot of mythology about people having a lot of kids or certain groups having a lot of kids. The birth rate's pretty low in this country. I think it's getting to be historically low. And, you know, These concerns are outdated. Like, there was there's a lot of outdated estimates. A lot of the predictions that we've been hearing, you and I have been hearing our whole lives, and it goes back further than that, about an exploding population and being a danger. But it's turned out in the last several decades to be an unfounded concern. I mean, I think, like, one of these really stupid, memes that get out there is kind of comes from this book called The Population Bomb. This was written by a Stanford professor called Paul Ehrlich.
Why is the font like that?
I'm not sure. It's a book from a long time ago. Huh. So it's from 1968. This is a really stale idea. It says, you know, I mean, it talks about concerns about overpopulation, and then it actually advocates action to limit population growth. I mean, it turns out it's flawed. The idea, the predictions this makes turn out to be flawed, and yet people are continuing to repeat the thinking behind this book. Do you know what I mean? It's gotten into like the popular culture in terms of actually, you know, bearing in terms of reality, you know, coming even close to their predictions. That hasn't happened. But instead, the ideas have kind of leaked out from academia to, you know, the street. And then when people hear about the idea of, you know, reducing the population, it's a very dangerous thing, right? Because people seem eager to kind of go on this. And instead of being told that they're actually thinking in a scientific way, which people tend to tell themselves, they should be told that they're just indulging their primal murderous instincts, probably, or something else like that. And it's stunning. But do you know what I mean? You could talk to all sorts of what I call smart, stupid people, but basically your NPR listening, you know, Meet the Press watching, you know, tons of bullshit believing kind of, you know, middle class, you know, social climber type that you might see at a TEDx event. These kind of people are going to buy into these stupid ideas, right? And they kind of take it as an assumption.
Mm-hmm. They do.
Yeah, and you know, in reality,
it's a joke. It's a fucking joke. Say, people, you know what it might be?
Or something. I don't know.
Well, what do you think is really underlying, you know, this current wave of this old, you know, what do we want to call this? Political push, or to use the current word, meme or theme. What do you think's behind what's, you know, this current surge?
Well, you know, I guess that you can see the obvious links to the more alarmist parts of the environmentalist movement. Because there's I would consider myself an environmentalist, and I'm very much in favor of reducing and stopping the pollution, the destruction of habitats, all the terrible things that they're doing. You know, I mean, look at all the we've got to balance things out, and I believe in conservation, and I believe like that we have to look at the bird habitats and stuff before we just put windmills everywhere. And you know, like I think that it's now there's the corporate environmentalists who say, who cares about the bird habitats, let's put those windmills up because they're a nominally green form of energy. And I think they actually are a very green form of energy, but I don't consider it green anymore if you're murdering bird habitats. So I think that, do you know what I mean, we have this, think about the kind of progress that we're being asked to embrace, not the progress of preserving the world for humans and birds and other animals and other life forms and making it viable and sustainable. It's like, you know, getting this Al Gore corporate kind of like venture capital environmentalism, the jet setting green credit buying environmentalism that people seem to buy into. And it's like, you know, I don't have any time for like people that want to just, you know, want to just use alarmism and to try to, you know, put in unbalanced kinds of solutions. Nuclear weapons are terrible, but so are nuclear plants. Look at the ongoing meltdown in Japan at Fukushima. That is a terrible disaster. We've talked about before in the podcast. Unbelievable
disaster, huge environmental disaster, and a humanitarian crisis, and it's just very tragic. And it was a badly built GE power plant from a long time ago that had a known bad design and was known to be near the sea. But there's a lot of other plants they know are near earthquake faults or near the edge of the sea or a lot of things like that in the U.S. and other places. France is filled with them. Now, Germany has wisely decided to phase out nuclear power. And I think, you know, other countries have to follow that lead. I mean, Germany is certainly, you know, they're a country that understands a lot about technology and stuff. And I think they just weighed the risk looking at what happened in Japan and said, you know, we got to get out of this, you know. I mean, it's a small country, right? They don't have any, so is Japan. They don't have anywhere to just dump the waste or the plants or anything like that. And it's bad news, but you hear people that call themselves environmentalists that say they're in favor of nuclear power. Their argument is false on the facts, and I believe it's wrong on values. And you understand what I'm saying, why I think it's wrong on values. I don't think nuclear power is worth the risk and the danger and the environmental degradation that it does do and the unmanageable waste that's highly dangerous that it creates, and, you know, the problems with Yucca Mountain and all that. But there's a real problem on fact, too. I'll tell you what. These people that advocate for nuclear plants, they should try to educate themselves on how nuclear plants work. Nuclear plants are incredibly complex. Nuclear plants require a lot of power. They're not as efficient. They're not as clean. They're not any of those things as the industry propaganda claims. It's we're often told, you know, is the facts on the matter, and it's not. If it were so you know efficient, you know, there would be someone trying to build one now. Companies won't build one. There's no private market to build nuclear plants. Isn't this a market, you know, society we supposedly live in? It is, except for the rich and the powerful, right? So, I mean, they don't want to have to observe the market for nuclear. A private company will not take the risk of creating the nuclear plant because they don't want to take on the liability.
Well, I mean, it's true. And, you know, everything that you said about nuclear plants is really bad and awful. And, you know, if you keep asking why and digging deeper into nuclear power, you find that at the core of why we have it does not really align with, you know, the core of humanity, you know, and this environmental movement. I mean, we want to preserve. I mean, how dare people think that they know more than the earth they were born onto with no explanation as to why. But here we are, yet existing in this earth with other planets around us that don't have nearly as complex life forms as Earth does. And for them to say that the earth can't sustain humanity, I mean, there's a cycle. There's birth, there's life, there's death, you know, and the population is growing at a certain rate. But instead of focusing on preserving, conserving, returning the earth back as much as possible to a natural state,
right,
we've really torn it apart. And I mean,
well, yeah, there's
tons and tons and tons of information about the effects. And I mean, that's a big part of what science has really studied and said, look, you know, there's a certain way that an environment is set up. When you move all this stuff, well, hey, you know, birds live in these trees and squirrels climb up there and put their, you know, nets up there. And I can't just sit there. That squirrel. Well, but I don't know. I see like lots of squirrels. But, you know, it's like habitats in the rainforest. You know, there's got to be a mix. And it's like, and there's room for everybody. You know, there's not like, okay, we got to like clear out all the trees and build houses because there's nowhere for humans to go. It's like, okay, but you know, we got to think about that. We got to think about that balance. And a lot of what we're doing is destroying that. And when you look at what's destroying that, you see, like, you know, if you want to like take away people's cars or something, like just pick something like really big, right?
Right.
And people are like, no.
Well,
you know, but it's like, okay, like, but here's the thing. It's like, I don't want to take away your car. You know, I am a futurist technologist, right? So I want to take us to the future, and I know technology is a way to get us there. So let's use it for good. We know we got to get places. You know, we know we got to do things. What
the vehicles that we're using now, what's their effect? Oh, they put all this crap and pollution into the air, and we have to depend on, you know, oil to make gasoline to make them run. Well, okay. Well, is there a better way? You know, is there something that's like less disruptive to the earth, to humans, to people? You know, can we come together with all the great minds in the world and figure something out?
Well, do you think that individual transportation is gonna be part of the solution? Like, because for a long time, haven't we kind of been told, at least by some people, I don't know, that we're going to, like, the cars of the future will all be on tracks. Instead of talking about hybrid and solar and what might be more likely now, well, for a while, people are pushing natural gas cars, which is also another dirty fuel, but not maybe quite as dirty, except now the terrible way that they're getting the natural gas out of a lot of the eastern U.S. is really messed up. You know, the fracking. And you know who's really into the fracking? The owner of the Browns. you heard about that, right? Yes. This is the guy, the pilot.
It's James. It's been a hot news day in Cleveland. I also heard the Cavaliers coach got fired.
Yes, Byron Scott got fired. Yes.
And we have Cleveland Cavs or Cleveland Browns coach being investigated by the FBI, I believe.
Yes, they went and seized all sorts of stuff at his place of business. It's the business that he runs. I guess I think he may have co-own it with his brother, the governor of Tennessee. So that guy's named Bill Haslam. The guy who owns the Browns is named Jimmy Haslam, and this guy had just recently, I think in February or so, announced that he was moving back to the company, that he was going to get back involved in day-to-day operations at the company. And then just only months later, he's having a team of federal agents come in. And there is a lot of talk now about whether they were doing something with rebates that was very shady and possibly illegal. That's the alleged rumored behavior that I saw in a local news station in Cleveland talking about. But I mean, this story, of course, is on ESPN. I mean, look, I mean, this guy, I don't know if I mentioned on the podcast or just tweeted about him, but I've already I shared my dislike for this guy because he's involved in fracking, which is appalling. And this is the guy who his business is the Pilot J or Flying J Pilot.
Oh, those gas station
truck stop places.
Yeah. Very 70s logo, Browns and golds, I remember.
Yeah, just really. Yeah, those places are awful. Like, you know, I like to travel around this country, and we go different places, and I'm telling you, the times that we stop at those truck stops with, like, the weird little restaurant, sometimes it's like a Denny's or something, and then the arcade with a shower stall next to it, and the hallway with all the weird, like, outdated radio equipment, like a whole, and then the rack of Slim Jims and like tons of tobacco products, and just just the vibe at those places, just the vibe of truck stops. I'm not sure what brand this one was. I remember I asked for rolling papers at one in Indiana one time, and the lady just yelled at me, and I was like, no, seriously, do you have papers? It's, I just need them. And she's just like, I know what those are for. You're going to smoke marijuana with those. And she's like yelling at me at the place.
Wow. That's pretty uncool.
She didn't know what I was going to use them for.
We just got some coffee
because we've been making it in our French press and we haven't had it in a while, huh? It's pretty good.
Yeah, we better learn how to use a French press because... Oh, no. Soundboard blow up. There's shit playing in the background. Oh, this is the company. These are the people. This is the FBI investigating the Browns owner.
Company which operates an enormous series of truck stops. It involves financial chicanery in which he and his company took in money. They owed refunds or rebates to their customers. They have not paid the refunds.
Ooh.
There's an awful lot of money involved. And from what we know now from the FBI, this is an investigation that began some time ago, and we're just now learning of it.
Pilot Flying J, truck stops all over the Midwest where you are, based in Chicago. Now, just a couple of days ago, Haslam had basically said he had nothing to do with this. He was aware of the investigation, but said maybe an employee here, an employee there was responsible for some of the wrongdoing. The FBI affidavit clearly states that he was involved. If
here an employee, case, everywhere an employee. E-I-E-I-O.
It looks like they're narking on him. Is that what it sounds like? There's no don't snitch ethos at that place, I guess.
What has happened
is
that one is great.
He's still talking. Look at ESPN going over and we're about this shit.
They're excited. They've got some good stuff. Cleveland is always a good place for sports news, man.
Sports bad news. You know,
sports bad news. Okay.
Well, okay. So yeah, on to Byron Scott. You're right.
Somebody else, was tweeting when I saw the tweet about the Browns. They said, and the Indians suck, or they're losing, or something.
Let me tell you, the Indians are already in last place.
Oh, geez.
They are. Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Well, hey.
We
got lots of games to go.
They're not putting a good product on the field. And the ownership just isn't doing enough. And I think they bought back fans' loyalty for the first, few weeks of the season because they did sign a few people. But it's just so obviously not enough. I'm looking down. Where's the story about the Cavs firing Byron Scott? I guess that's such a non-story at this point that nobody is even really they're already talking about who's going to be there next. Like, that's how cold this business is. Like, Larry Brown? Or no, Mike Brown? No way! No! That's not possible. So ESPN's slinging the rumor, which is probably nonsense, that Mike Brown will come back to the Cavaliers. You know what Mike Brown did since he left Cleveland, since he got fired?
Nothing!
No, he was the coach of the Lakers for a few weeks, literally, and they got fired.
Scott, let me get your reaction really quickly.
Oh, here's those loudmouths talking about Byron Scott.
Cavaliers have announced they fired head coach Byron Scott. Let me get your reaction really quickly.
Stephen A. Smith.
Not happy about it. As a person, but at the same time, I can't blame them for the decision that they've made. His record in 3 years, he's won 19, 21, and 24 games. That is a record of, 64. I wanted to say 64 and 166, but subtract 16 games from there because remember,
you're going to lose a two. You'll lose a fucking two.
And more.
Very minimal progress, 16 losses in the last 18 games. Sometimes you got to make a decision to move in a different direction. I can't fault Cleveland for that, no matter how much I like Byron Scott.
Byron Scott is a good basketball coach. He has been before, and he will be again, Stephen A. Maybe he needed a change of scenery, but he got stuck.
Getting out of Cleveland.
Rebuild post-LeBron. I can't defend that they lost 16 of their last 18, and they blew some big leads at home.
And they blew that game to LeBron. They were going to end the... They were going to end the streak, and they didn't.
When he hits the open market, we'll get another very good job. And I'm hoping the next one is a little farther along than this rebuild was when he took it over.
Rebuild? What are they even rebuilding?
He knew what he was getting into, and he took the job. So maybe he should take a better job next time.
Does he get another head coaching job, Stephen A.?
I hope so. It doesn't look good, but I hope so for his sake.
So there's a movie out called I, Steve.
Okay.
It's Justin Long in a... The guy who did the I'm a Mac commercials, right. I'm a PC, like he was the guy who played the Mac, I guess, like he in a metaphorical sense, and he plays Steve Jobs in a movie that proclaims itself the first Steve Jobs biopic, you know, and it's on funnierdie.com. And it's like, it's, I think it might be a little deadpan, a little humorous. I watched the first 5 minutes of it. I'm probably going to watch more of it, but, it's curious. Like, it's a little humorous, but pretty much deadpan. Like he starts out and he's going over his, a presentation that he's giving, and it's like the older Steve Jobs, like the 50 something Steve Jobs with the beard and stuff, but like, and then he's talking to a maintenance guy and telling him to go home and he'll lock up and all this kind of stuff, like but then he goes to India and he talks to a guru, and the guru is like, if you could make compute, he's like, what is computing? And then he says, well, like, it's hard to explain. And then like and then the guru is like, if you could make computing easy to explain, you could do a lot, or something like that. And then, I don't know, like, you know, it goes on from there. But it's kind of curious. Like, I'm not really sure what to think of it.
Well, that's cool, because I just saw my first guru last Friday, Gurudev Yogi Amrit Desai, and I wrote a blog post about my experience. Pretty soon after I did, we actually got an assignment from our teacher, so it was kind of cool. Through Facebook, I found out instead of email, which I find interesting how I'm finding information through different social sites. But yeah, you know, they provide you with a lot of really great answers, and that sounds like a very guru type of answer, you know, to make computing simple, which in essence he really did, you know. And I don't want to give so much credit to Steve, but to the Apple, you know,
I guess platform, not all the history's been written yet, but I think he does deserve a lot of credit.
Yeah,
you know, we'll have to see.
One of the great leaders of that, you know.
Yeah, he was one of the one of the titans of the era, and I guess it'll be a while before his historical reputation really settles. They'll be like, I think the biography that came out recently was, I think it was derided by a lot of close Apple fans, because that Walter Isaacson guy he seemed to have a lot of problems with understanding technology and didn't really educate himself about the technology as much as a lot of geeks had wanted. I think that was a complaint I remember John Siracusa made about it, I think, if I'm paraphrasing it right, and among many others. And I'd never bothered to read the book because it sounded like a very pretty disappointing book, you know. So I don't know. Like, did you ever think about reading that book at all, the Steve Jobs? Or do you think, I think there'll be better ones somehow. They'll get access to archives, emails, more history. I guess this guy had access, but he didn't really care, like Walter Isaac said, the way, you know, the book seemed, it just, and there is a biopic based on his book, which hopefully it's loosely based and it's really just about Steve Jobs' life, that's supposed to be on its way. I don't know who's behind that. And then the Ashton Kutcher Steve Jobs biopic was screened at Sundance, and probably because I bet it sucked, it's been pushed back from an April release.
And Ashton was Steve Jobs in the early days. Did he go with long hair? Kind of historical thing.
I don't know about it. I know how I'd feel if I saw the movie.
I will not disappoint you.
Wait a minute.
I will give you.
This isn't my world.
Only three. Use for the rest of your
life. Disappointed!
When you decide moment is right.
These will make you think different.
So I put these on a postcard?
No, put it on your tongue. Take one when you want to see the future. You can do that here. You pick the moment and do it. Do it when you need it to see the real future.
So he's giving him something on a tab. I guess that looks kind of like an acid dose or something, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Remember that was with the Steve Jobs quote about right Bill Gates. He should have taken LSD or spent some time in an ashram.
I was more confused than ever. So. I had a sweet part-time job making video game computer chips for Atari, but I couldn't imagine spending the rest of my life counting centipede pixels.
Alright, so, I don't know. I don't know where it goes from there. 5.5 minutes in now.
In 14.
I mean, it certainly looks like, you know, not completely like a farce, like a comedy kind of thing. Sort of deadpan, I guess. Like, maybe a verging into serious?
Yeah, we should definitely watch that. It looks like it's 78 minutes. It's a...
Yeah.
What would you call that, like... I guess I don't know how long it has to be feature length.
I would say that it essentially would clear the length, but because I think it was probably made for the web and video, like, there's a lot of technical things that may not meet for a film buff's, you know, definitions or whatever. But yeah, no, I would say that the standard, that's, you know, movies go on forever now, mostly, you know? The standard used to be that if it went over an hour, it was a movie. I think, like, remember bad movies when like, back, say, in the early 90s or so, bad movies would just be cut down to a sucky hour or 2 minutes or so. They wouldn't, it'd be an hour 10 minutes, maybe 70 minutes. That, you know, think about it, like when you worked in a movie theater, weren't there some movies that were pretty much in and out, less than an hour and a half? I mean, you know, I think a feature film has to go over an hour, but I'm not sure what the official standard is.
I feel like things were definitely longer than an hour. Maybe 80 minutes on the short end, and you know, anywhere between, you know, 90 and 120.
But they go on forever now. Like,
but now, 120 is kind of the standard. Oh, it's going to be at least 2 hours.
Oh, is it? Is that the
2 hours, see, 20?
I hardly go to movies. See, like, there's stuff, I guess, like how could...
You've Got Mail.
That's 2 hours. That's a terrible movie. And it's like,
they could only get...
See,
that is dreadful. To tell what?
The story. Exactly. That it goes on some forever.
Bookstores, and we're emailing you, and we already did the Seattle thing, and we're in Hollywood, and now we're doing a rehash story where we feel like we've developed characters.
I want to have you summarize movies. I want to have you summarize movies. Look at.
I should team up with that guy that has the YouTube channel that gets all those awesome videos and be like, hey, I want to review some too.
Yeah. Well,
what do you think about that guy?
Some YouTube. Which guy is it? There's a lot of type people that are like.
I think he's on your feed. We watch him a couple times. He's always talking about cool things, and he shows all the movies he got on Blu-ray.
Oh yeah, there's that one dude, Wet Movie One, and then there's that. Oh, Sean Phillips, I think, is the other guy. Yeah, there's just these guys that are like, they're so into movies and like pop culture, and I just kind of find it fascinating. Like I'm interested in like when they go to those the comic book shows or the events and the kind of people they hang out with, because it's kind of fascinating. People like that are that into that, but then there's sometimes when they just have like sit and show all the DVDs they bought, and they bought like a bunch of DVDs. Like, here's the thing though, look at this garbage. Like Batman and Robin, 125 minutes of that.
Yeah, see, and when was that done? What year?
1997. I'm thinking of shitty 90s movies.
Oh,
that's already late in the 90s? All right, what's a terrible early 90s? Because the earlier Batmans, I mean, Batman Forever kind of sucked.
I was working at the theater during that time before that, but, you know,
well,
way before that. I mean, it was starting to creep up to 2 hours being the sort of average. You know, I think, you know, like videos, like VHS is like, you know, I'd have like a Disney special or whatever, and it would be 60 minutes of like, you know, Mickey and Friends or whatever. And that was kind of like, those were kind of like an hour.
kind of okay. And I think it was like, I need an hour or something here.
They,
you know?
They, you would have to put an hour in to make it, to sell a feature ticket, basically.
Right.
You know, look at like a movie like Hook from 1991, 144 minutes.
Wow.
Like, that movie sucks. You don't need half of that fucking movie. And you don't need any of that movie. Like, I mean, I like Robin Williams, but I mean, think about it. Like, the actual, like, content of the movie, like, it's horrible. Like he gets in a like name calling arguments with little kids. Like it's just like a stupid movie. Like, and anyway, like movies? I guess movies have been going on forever for a long time.
Lawrence of Arabia. That one's really long.
Yeah, but that's like a pretty good movie.
I don't think so.
228 minutes. Okay, how about, well, I mean, like, you want to think about epic long. Oh, all right, we'll check. That's been broken up into three. That's true. Apocalypse
See?
Now.
Look at it. Now it's everything's broken into series.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of story in The Hobbit, though. I mean, that one makes sense. Apocalypse Now is 202 minutes, not a bad 30 seconds in that. Apocalypse Now Redux, which I like, is some controversy, but I like the extra scenes. It doesn't give me, it just says Apocalypse Now in this, because I believe the Redux would add maybe an hour or so. But
really?
even there, right, that's very long. That's over 3 hours, but there isn't a bad minute in that movie. That's an amazing movie. Now,
well, it's great when movies have controversies around them like that, because, you know, it means that people have attached themselves to the story. And, you know, when did Redux come out?
Oh, I don't know, about 2005 or so.
Right, so it was like, hey, what are you doing? You're messing with my memory of this movie.
No, we can't have that. Like, that, because that's just like those Star Wars idiots.
Well, isn't that what it is, though?
Isn't
that what people are upset about?
I
have
no
patience. The
Apocalypse Now fans, I like to think of as a little different than like Star Wars nutcases.
How would you describe their upsetness with Redux?
I think some people like the original cut, and some people like the how he was able, in my case, it liked how he was able to put into effect his original vision of the movie. It is better because it tells more of the story. It doesn't, there's loose ends in the original that you pick up again for a while. Mm-hmm. There's whole scenes that are fleshed out, and it's the original actors. It's not like,
right.
You know, and people, and the original version is available. Coppola is happy, or whoever the studio is happy to sell the original version, right?
Right,
it's findable.
Right.
So it's not like, the Coppola is not that, you know, we shouldn't even, they came kind of out of, Northern California in the 70s, both of them, but like, Coppola is not the type of filmmaker that George Lucas is. I mean, and you know me, I like the first two Star Wars movies, you know, to some extent. I enjoy them. But I just don't have any time for all that bullshit about the Star Wars. First of all, I just don't understand how people, like, they take these few little in-between kind of cut scenes where he adds an animal and they go crazy about it. And I mean, yeah, like the Han shooting first or not bullshit. I mean, that's stupid. But that's just like Spielberg and the stupid bullshit with the flashlights. It just shows those people are totally, just, you know, commercial hack filmmakers just trying to make like a safer choice than they did when they were younger men and directing the movies. That's not surprising. But people freak out over the stupid scenes that have more animated animals. And I mean, Lucas probably wanted more animated animals and he couldn't put them in there originally. Like, why, you know, the whole thing about, why do people think that they're owed that? Like some sort of like continuity of the thing? Don't they understand that things are always changing? And in fact, they're gonna look back, they're gonna look at the work as a different person is in the future anyway. Why do people think filmmakers owe them that?
Because film is art, and art is this individual expression, but truly powerful art it whatever is happening inside the artist resonates with what's happening inside the audience. And Star Wars and some of these bigger movies have resonated with so many people that they've created this community around it. And they have taken ownership of it. I mean, you know, they really want to be a part of it. Is that
theft? Did they commit theft when they took ownership of it, of something that wasn't theirs?
I think that LucasArts and George Lucas and Star Wars, like, I've worked at Star Wars Magazine, they did create that community. I mean, they kept it alive. They did a lot of spin-offs. You know, they involved fan fiction. They realized that, you know, they were in a fantasy genre, and there was kind of already some kind of existing rules around fantasy. So but I think it hit in the 70s, and there was just, it was just one of those times when people wanted to kind of rise up and rise together and have this adventure and this kind of just spirit. It captured the spirit, I think, of that generation. And, I mean, if you look at, you know, kind of who's keeping it alive now. But now I guess they're passing it down to kids. I don't know that it's as popular with, like, the younger generations. I mean, I think they get it. Maybe their parents have played with it or whatever. But, yeah, that's my thoughts.
No, I find that fascinating. I think that...
That you had to go to OKC Goldmine.
No, come on. I wanted to show you who the Star Wars fans... It was part of the conversation we were having. These... I don't know if I can find a profile here, but the kind of people that you see
that's a good one.
The kind of people you see on the OKC Goldmine website, they are often very heavy Star Wars fans. Like the kind of people who continue to carry, like, a deep, abiding obsession with Star Wars, like, well into adulthood. These are the core fans. So, I mean, I just want you to take a look. Right here. There's somebody holding...
wielding a sword.
Yes, and what does he say in his profile?
Oh, let's see. I'm a very Jedi-ish person. Well, you're either a Jedi or you're not. So, you know, I mean, you're either like a Jedi in training or... I guess once you're a Jedi, you're kind of always a Jedi, and you're just kind of always training, right?
I don't know, but I think that's the core fan. Yeah,
because we're not Star Wars core fans.
Well, this guy. So this post and some other stuff we've talked about, there'll be links to that at the show notes. You can find the show notes at djmcloud.com, and then search for podcast 82.
And wow, 82.
No, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry for getting that wrong. It's 83. Thank you for reminding me. I actually I've already posted 82, so it's 83.
Yeah, so go check out 82, which I'm not in.
But if you want the show notes for this episode, check out podcast 83, and the show notes will include a link to the self-identified very Jedi-ish person. Well, thank you very much for joining me, Jessica.
Well, thank you for having me on this lovely podcast on a great day, and
yeah, and thanks for sharing about your blog post. That's definitely one of the things that'll be in the show notes. And there's other stuff from Jessica at that website, jessica.sf3am.com. And if you want to see us on video, just go to YouTube, and my account is Pacific Pelican. And maybe we'll do a video cast next time.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good idea. I need a little heads up, though, for the video.
No, I know. Well, the news desk is just, half of the room is not in good shape for the news desk. But we could still probably create the illusion of a neat-ish kind of room, but, you know, there's a lot of upheaval going on in this room. The date, today we're recording April 19th, 2013, and whatever, have a good one.
Try some beans. You've been so good, I want to give you a treat.